to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Once again, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. Overjoyed as always to be here with you talking about NXT. Before we get started, as you know, you can always find me over on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZACHNXT. We're always talking about wrestling and other fun stuff over there, so you can join in over on Twitter. We have a pretty fun show for you this week. Couple more matches in the men's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Tournament. Also unveiled that there's going to be a women's bracket for that Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. That's the first time that we have had a women's tag team side of things, so that's always good. And we have the Fight Pit, finally. I couldn't tell you why it was delayed, if somebody was actually hurt, or if they just pushed it back. We got it about 2 weeks late, but we finally got it. So, we have some fun stuff. Alright, now as you know, generally speaking, we go over the news and the notes, stuff that's happening in wrestling not directly related, usually, to NXT. Now, last week, had the pleasure of talking bad about a legendary announcer, because he says dumb stuff sometimes. I now have the opportunity to do something similar with a legendary wrestler. So, The Undertaker, all of our favorite kind of, sort of, but not really retired dead people that fight in a ring, was on the Joe Rogan podcast, the Joe Rogan Experience. I'm sure you've heard of the Joe Rogan Experience. It's a podcast whose host is kind of like that one friend's older brother who smoked weed and did hallucinogens and talked about those a lot, but he usually has good conversations. But he had a conversation with The Undertaker, who's doing a lot more interviews than he used to do in character. He was one of the last guys that took his character very seriously, and as he is a dead man, would not often do podcasts because it's not really a thing that dead men tend to do. So he's on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he is talking about how it's tough for him to enjoy WWE as a fan right now because, and I'm quoting from Ryan Satin on Twitter, quote, "The product has changed so much, and it's kind of soft." Also, quote, "I'll probably piss a lot of people off, but they need to hear it." Also a quote, "There's too much pretty and not enough substance." So two things here. One, I would generally agree that there is a problem in WWE right now. I wouldn't say that it's too much pretty and not enough substance so much as it is a bunch of bad substance. It's not particularly pretty because it's bad, at least on the main roster. And while it's not pretty, there is a lot of substance to what is happening. It's just not a good substance. So that last quote, that there's too much pretty and not enough substance. He is a legend, and I would never say that my opinion is going to be as important as his as it pertains to the business that he gave years and years and of his life and a lot of his health to. I certainly wouldn't do that. I will, however, point out that the last match that The Undertaker had was against AJ Styles, and it was not held in a wrestling ring because The Undertaker could not wrestle a full match in a wrestling ring. The Undertaker essentially took the year off and then had a cinematic match that was filmed beautifully, like a movie, in a graveyard, with the help of Gallows and Anderson, who were promptly let go after that during a pandemic, just, you know, small details, and a bunch of people attacking. What I'm saying is a lot of distractions. And again, it was a cinematic match where, in some ways, it's harder to do because you're doing a lot of takes and you're not in the flow of things. On the other hand, it covers up a multitude of sins in terms of if The Undertaker can't work as well as he always does. And it was filmed with what looked like television or movie cameras. There was a whole production crew. There were cuts so that The Undertaker didn't look old. AJ Styles flew all over for him to make it look believable, as did Gallows and Anderson. The Undertaker rode in on a motorcycle. The Undertaker raised his arm and his symbol was lit into the side of the barn as he rode away. And it was basically a workaround match. In other words, his WrestleMania match was, while excellent, his WrestleMania match was too much pretty and not enough substance. I say this not to come after somebody who is legitimately a legend, but I think that there is a tendency amongst older wrestlers to, rather than explicitly try to help younger wrestlers and understand that, much the same way as, like, if a new song comes out, I might not like it, but it's also not for me. And if somebody likes it, I'm going to say, oh, cool. I'm not going to say, that's not music. You don't know what you're talking about. I used to be a music producer, and if you haven't been a music producer, you can't tell me it's good. You don't have to like it. You can say that you long for the days where this and this and this, but what I don't think you should do is say, it's probably going to piss a lot of people off, when you know that you're a legend and nobody would say anything to you, although clearly they should. But you're just going to blanket statement say that it's soft. So now you're implying that that's the same thing with the talent. You could have said that management doesn't put people in good positions. You could say that the person running the company has been out of touch for a long time. But you see Vince McMahon as a father figure, and he's very close to Vince, and so he won't say that. So it can't be the fault of management and the people that put people in positions. No, it has to be that the style's different and that now it's soft. It doesn't have an edge to it. And the closest you get to an actual criticism of the company that controls everything is that it's more style over substance. I will also remind you that Undertaker comes from the Attitude Era, which, while by far the best point in the history of wrestling, was a lot of style. And if we are going to say that the style is the extra stuff and the substance is the work in the ring, the Attitude Era was way more style over substance. You would have long talking segments followed by a couple-minute match where they would brawl through the crowd. And again, love the Attitude Era. My favorite era of wrestling, obviously. But let's not act like we come from some untouchable age of wrestling where everything was meant something and everything was great and now it's gone to hell because dudes don't sell super kicks. Or people are trying to get a "this is awesome" chant. So it's maybe to you it is more style over substance. But what you could do is you could go to the guys in private and say, hey, here's what I think you should implement. What I think isn't super helpful at all, really, is to talk crap about it on a podcast that a lot of non-wrestling fans are going to listen to. And then any chance that anybody would have had of checking out wrestling now just heard one of the most legendary wrestlers ever say that it's more style over substance. Again, I'll remind you that his last match was filmed specifically in a way so as not to show that he was aging. Or you could say style over substance. That's cool. 2 weeks, two legends being jerks, got that out of the way. Awesome. So, we're going to talk about a show that's more substance over style, maybe, I guess, NXT. We get a recap of the start of the Dusty Tag Team Classic from last week. We'll be continuing that. We'll be continuing that this night as well. The women's tag bracket also begins tonight. That'll be fun. Also, Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa are finally going to be in the fight pit. I'm still not sure why that match got delayed. It was supposed to happen a couple weeks ago, I think at New Year's Evil, which was essentially a mini takeover to counter-program AEW. But it didn't happen there, and we were told that, I think it was Thatcher, had an unspecified injury, and so it wasn't happening. So I don't know if Thatcher was actually injured, or if like they just needed to push it back for time, or what happened. Either way, it should be a very good match. Ciampa has weird build-ups to his matches that always are kind of left of center, but the matches themselves are always very good. So we should be in for it for that match. I'm excited to finally see it. We cut to the ring, and Kushida and Leon Ruff are already in the ring at the end of their entrance. It's basically Kushida's entrance, and Leon Ruff looks very happy to be there. Next up, we have The Way members Johnny Gargano and Austin Theory out. The Gargano family is objectively a better name for this group, but what do I know? It's just that the Gargano family was right there, and then The Way doesn't mean anything, and the Gargano family's awesome, but whatever, it's fine. We cut to the announcers, and Vic Joseph is with Wade Barrett, and Beth Phoenix is actually in the building at the desk today for the last, I don't even know how long, Beth has been joining commentary virtually, so Vic and Wade were there in person, and then you would hear Beth's voice, but you wouldn't see her, so this time she's in the building. I'm not sure why, if she was just in town or whatever, but it's always good to see her at the booth. Beth Phoenix has gotten very good at commentary. She's really grown into the role, and three people booths don't usually work, but Vic and Wade and Beth are all excellent. There's no weak link, and unlike most, or the past, rather, Raw and SmackDown, three teams, they aren't trying to talk over each other or clash or anything like that. They all set each other up really well, and they all work together really well. So kudos to Beth for putting in the work. She's better than some of the long-term announcers on the main roster. So she's a great addition to NXT. Kushida at the end here hits a modified Northern Light suplex and picks up the win. It's a surprising, I believe he pinned Johnny Gargano. It's a surprising finish. I would have assumed that the Gargano family, I'm just going to call him that because it's a better name, were going to go further in the tournament. They aren't doing anything with Leon Ruff, but they may want to do something with Kushida. I figured they already would have done something with Kushida by now, but they haven't pulled the trigger on it, so he's just kind of doing stuff. So maybe this is a good setup. I don't know. Cut to a video package of Pete Dunne cutting a promo on Finn Balor. This is odd because they keep setting this up as if it's going to be Pete Dunne versus Finn Balor for the title, right? But then they keep steering away at the last second. So the first time looked like it was going to be them, and then at the last minute it turns out it's going to be Kyle O'Reilly. Then it happened again a few weeks ago, and it ended up being, it seemed like Karrion Kross was going to be next up. So they're essentially setting up a feud in the future, and I don't really understand, because if you keep setting it up without ever paying it off, like ever actually having the wrestles, you run the risk of losing some of the interest you could have had because it's been going on forever. So I don't really see a benefit. Like, Sasha Banks and Bayley, the first time they were like a tag team, not this last time when it was excellent, but the last time they were a team, they kept teasing a breakup, and you knew that one was coming, and they would always say, no, that's ridiculous, and the company would say that's not what they're doing, but that they aren't telling the truth. But the problem is, the first time they were together, they waited so long to have them actually in a feud that you essentially lost a lot of the heat or interest that you would have had because it just took so dang long to get to it. So this last time, they had an abbreviated version of it where they were great friends, they both won titles, they were tag team champions, and then they relatively quickly, comparatively, had Bayley turn on Sasha. So you had that interest. Here, it feels like you keep setting this up, but you don't want to do it yet. And I understand it's a really big match, but it's now been two or three times where you've had them talking to each other as if you were setting up highlights for the video package because they're in a feud. But it's not happening. So I'm sure it'll be a great match when it does happen, and I'm excited to see it happen. I'm just wondering if we're going into it or if we're going to pull away at the last minute. There's a quick video of Karrion Kross and Scarlett. It just says that Karrion Kross is next. So he makes his entrance. It is very cool entrance, as we always say here on the show. Karrion Kross is facing another enhancement talent. I believe his name is Ashanti Adonis. We've seen him a few times on NXT. Here's the thing. Karrion Kross is by now an established wrestler in NXT. I don't remember how long he's been here, but it's been a while. He's beaten some of the biggest names. He just beat Damian Priest. He's beaten Keith Lee. He's beaten just a who's who in NXT. He's beaten Ciampa. And he's beaten those big names, and he's won the NXT title. I say all that to say, why is he still doing setup matches? What are they showcasing? Because all it's doing is it's making him look strong against inferior opponents. So his segment on each show is not interesting. It isn't a good match. It's just a bigger dude beating up a smaller dude. And I've seen the bigger dude in the ring with legitimate competition several times already. So enhancement matches, which are, if you don't know, it's you take one of your stars, so a Karrion Kross or a Braun Strowman, or back in the day, like a Sergeant Slaughter, and you put them, they have their entrance, and usually the enhancement talent is already standing in the ring. The enhancement talent, a lot of times, is somebody local, and they pick people who aren't intimidating looking. And the enhancement talent's job is to literally go in there and get beaten up by the star and lose. And traditional thinking on that is that if I am a wrestler that's new to WWE, and WWE wants to showcase me and make me look physically intimidating, show off some of my moves and make me look impressive, they have a chance to do all that because I'm facing an opponent that isn't going to win and isn't going to put up a fight, but I'm going to get to do my moves and I'm going to be intimidating and I'm going to look big because they're generally unassuming. So that's fine, and that almost always works, but it works with new talent. It worked with Karrion Kross the first time. It worked with Braun Strowman. That was the whole thing that started Braun Strowman. But it worked with Nia Jax, although Nia's a whole different thing. But this is weird. Desmond Troy, who is the tag partner of Adonis, was at ringside. He comes in the ring to try and help, but he gets choked out. And it has no effect because it's literally been the same thing for a few matches now. Again, this kind of thing works well if you have a new talent you're trying to showcase. But now with Karrion Kross, you've done a bunch of enhancement talents, and then he fought Ciampa, and then he fought Dijakovic to get to Keith Lee. He fought Keith Lee. Remember when Keith Lee was the NXT and the North American champion for like a couple weeks? Wasn't that awesome? And then he beats Keith Lee for the title. He gets injured, unfortunately, in that match. He has to give up the title. He comes back. He faces Damian Priest. He beats Damian Priest. And now he's back to just enhancement matches. So when he first got here and he was in enhancement matches, it felt like a new guy who was beating up enhancement talent. So he was getting like showcased. Now it feels like he fought lesser competition and then he fought competition. And now he's back to lesser competition. And if he's going to fight Finn Balor for the NXT title at some point, which you assume he will, and he should, he never lost that title, then it's weird to set that up. You would think you would go right from Damian Priest into Finn Balor. You wouldn't go Damian Priest, then enhancement talent, then Finn Balor. You would go Damian Priest, then other NXT wrestlers that we know already, and then Finn Balor. Because now he feels less important because he's not doing anything. And his part of the show is boring because he's just beating up a dude. And Karrion Kross generally does the same moves. That's fine. You can get away with that. But I'm seeing him in more enhancement matches than I should. And because of that, I'm seeing him do the same thing every week. And it doesn't work. That's not his fault so much as it is the way that this is being done. So we have a video on MSK, who is a team that debuted last week, recently signed by WWE. I forget what their old team's name was, but they made a big name for themselves and ended up coming to NXT. MSK consists of Wes Lee and Nash Carter. There was a joke at the beginning that I'm sure was supposed to be funny, but we missed it by a bunch, gang. Then a super generic promo. Blood, sweat, and tears, and blah, blah, blah. So listen, this is not MSK's fault. This was just boring scripting. NXT overwhelmingly does a great job with their video packages, especially ones where you are, like, learning about people. So, like, when Apollo Crews was in NXT, he was having really good matches, but he's not a great promo, so you didn't have him doing promos. But what they did do is they started doing video packages on Apollo and having him just talk normally and talk about himself and his life, and it got him more and more over with the fans because you felt connected to him because you were actually, like, learning something about somebody. And NXT has always been very, very good at that. All of their video packages are good, and especially for introducing people to NXT that may not have heard of a person or a team. But this one wasn't it. It didn't do anything for me. It told me their names, but it didn't make them more interesting at all. And it's weird because it's the first time that I can remember one of those being boring. And that sucks because I liked them. I liked their debut. Their moves are great. They seem like they're going to be a great team here in NXT. I just wish that, because I know that these two have an interesting story. Most people in NXT do. But they didn't get a chance to tell you. They went with a bunch of generic blood, sweat, and tears. Now we're finally here. Ember Moon tells you how innovative they are and says innovative 2 or 3 times so that you know they're innovative. And then we're done. I didn't learn anything about them except their names. It didn't give me anything to, like, relate to or hold on to. It just, this is who they are. Also, for the record, I hope sincerely that this team stays in NXT because Vince McMahon does not care about and certainly doesn't like tag teams, and therefore the main roster doesn't care about tag teams. They can have a lot of success in NXT, but they will not on the main roster. No team does. The New Day has had a lot of success and a lot of longevity, but their tag matches were never sold as important. Like, one of their best matches ever against the Usos in a Hell in a Cell match, it was Xavier Woods and I think it was Big E versus the Usos, and Kofi was outside. That match, that's one of my favorite tag matches I've ever seen, I think was on the pre-show for that pay-per-view. Vince, for whatever reason, just does not think... at worst, really dislikes tag team wrestling, and at best, does not think it's important at all. And so sometimes you'll get really good tag matches, but most of the time, it's an established team taking on two singles wrestlers who are feuding and have to find a way to work together, blah, blah, blah. So again, I hope that this team has a lot of success, and I'm very happy that they're here, and I sincerely hope the main roster never gets their hands on them. Although, to be fair, I feel that way about a lot of people. Rhea Ripley, please stay forever. Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik versus Imperium. This is the next Dusty Tag Classic match. It's an alright match. At the end, Lince hits a super kick out of the corner and then a shooting star press from the top rope, and they pick up the win. This is also, at first, it was a surprising finish just because I thought Imperium would win, although it occurs to me that I think Imperium's going to be going back to NXT UK, so it would make sense to have them put over this team before they go. They have a weigh-in for the fight pit. Ciampa comes in at 201 pounds, Thatcher comes in at 225. In kayfabe terms, in the storyline, I'm not sure why they're doing a weigh-in. Like, what if them's overweight? Like, there's no title or winner's purse that they mentioned. They have a UFC, nailed it, style face-off with Regal holding them apart, and Ciampa puts out his hand for a handshake, and Thatcher pushes him. Then they are separated. Then they have a tail of the tape, which is always pretty cool. The women's tournament is going to have four teams, and those matches are starting tonight. Our first is going to be Mercedes Martinez and Toni Storm versus KC Catanzaro and Kaden Carter. So at this point, I wrote that the announcers really want you to know that this is historic. Listen, it is historic, and I'm always very happy to see women's wrestling put in an important spot, but WWE thinks that it's going to enhance the moment, telling us that it's historic and telling us this is the first time ever, but they do it with every new women's match or concept they come up with, and it diminishes it more than it helps it. Like, just let it be important. Don't ram it into my head that it is important, because I know it's important. This is awesome. It's a Dusty Tag Team tournament, and now you have a women's tournament. I can intimate from that it's the first time it's happened and that it's important. They have a tendency to tell you something so many times that you resent it, which I don't think is what we're going for. Io Shirai comes out to cheer on the team that Mercedes is not on because they're feuding. At the end, Casey hits a big, cool, twisting moonsault thing, except she lands on the woman on her back instead of on her belly like a normal moonsault. It's like a corkscrew moonsault where you hit your opponent with your back, is the best way to put it, I think, succinctly, if nothing else. And Casey and Kaden Carter pick up the win. That makes sense. Mercedes and Io are going to have a match at some point for the women's title, so you wouldn't want to have Storm and Martinez go super far in the tournament. Finn storms into Regal's office. He says he wants Pete Dunne. He says, but I know the game he's playing. He wants to start with Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Regal says he needs to find a tag partner. Finn says he doesn't have friends anymore, blah, blah, blah. Finn's going to find a partner. This is weird and not great because you have the champion fighting his way to get a match with the challenger. It is almost always, and in fact, I can't think of a time when it hasn't been, the other way around. So generally what would happen, let's switch this and say Finn's the bad guy, Pete's the good guy, and Finn has Oney and Danny. Usually what happens is Pete Dunne challenges Finn Balor, and Finn says, nope, you haven't earned this title match, you gotta fight my two guys first, and you have to fight the other members of that stable to get to the champion. Never have I ever seen the champion go after the group that the challenger belongs to get to the challenger. See how silly it sounds now? It's weird. Why would a champion need to work his way up to a challenger? This is being set up like a huge match, which it is. But at this point, it kind of feels like Pete Dunne needs to win whenever this match happens for all of the setup that it's gotten. But either way, it'll be a great match. I'm excited to finally see it, and hopefully Karrion Kross doesn't take the NXT title from Finn before we can get that. It kind of feels like Pete Dunne should be the guy to beat Finn for the title as of right now. Fight pit time. The fight pit looks even better than it did last time with Thatcher and Matt Riddle. This is going to be like Thatcher's signature match, it seems. Before we get entrances, Finn goes into the Undisputed Era's locker room. The guys are there again, except Bobby Fish. I do not know if he's hurt, if he's doing something else, or what. But of all the segments I've ever seen Undisputed Era in, Bobby Fish has been absent from so many of those moments that it barely feels like Bobby Fish is in the Undisputed Era. Like, legitimately, if he just went off somewhere, I don't know, it wouldn't feel any different, because Bobby Fish is great, but he's never around. I don't know why. But he goes into the Undisputed Era's locker room, and he said he wants Kyle O'Reilly to be his tag partner. That's a pretty good choice. They all stare at each other for a really long time. Finn says, "You in?" And then they stare at each other for, again, a really long time. And then Kyle O'Reilly says, "He is in." Finn says, "See you next week." So next week, we will get Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly versus the tag champions Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch in a non-title match so that the champion can finally earn the chance to defend his own title instead of, say, going into Regal's office the way he did and just saying, "I would like to fight Pete Dunne, please," and either have it be a title match or a non-title match if you're worried about interference. But that's fine. It's not really fine, but whatever. What are we going to do? Looking down at the time remaining, there isn't much time for this fight pit. There's about 12 minutes when Thatcher finishes his entrance and Ciampa starts his. If this were TakeOver like it was supposed to be, or rather New Year's Evil like it was supposed to be, I think it would have gotten more time than this. Maybe it had to be pushed back because of time with New Year's Evil. Not sure. This is the kind of match it would seem like would need time, but these two are excellent. They'll get the most out of the time that they do have. We're reminded that in the fight pit, there are no pinfalls. You can only win by knockout or submission. The two guys start on top of the fight pit, which is a ring with basically a steel cage around it, but there's like a platform at the top and an open middle. It's like a steel cage with a walking platform around it kind of thing. So Thatcher and Riddle had the first of these fight pit matches. This is only the second one. Thatcher beat Riddle and sent him to the main roster last time. Ciampa said that he would retire before he goes to the main roster, so that's not going to happen here. I imagine Ciampa doesn't want to go to the main roster because of A, the schedule, and his neck, which is a concern, and B, because I'm sure they would use him in all of the wrongest ways they could because he's shorter. He's on the shorter side, and that's not even a joke. Vince would take one look at him, see that he is short, and never take him seriously again. I would like to remind you, this is the man who controls stuff that happens in the company. I promise you he would see him, see he's short, and just not take him seriously, and then he'd be doing funny skits. Thatcher lifts up Ciampa. He puts one of Ciampa's legs through the gap in the steel cage. He holds on to his other leg by like putting it around his neck. And he like lets Ciampa drop so that his body weight is pulling on it until Ciampa has no choice but to tap out. It was an okay match. It definitely needed more time. They felt like they were just rushing through stuff and it really didn't have a chance to build. It's not their fault. They did what they could, but like 10 minutes or 11 minutes is not enough time to do a match like this. I hope that in the future with the fight pit, we get them at TakeOver so that there can be time dedicated to it, because it doesn't work on TV. You would have had to have cut either one of the tag matches or one of the talking segments, which you could have done, but I think in the future, this needs to be a TakeOver thing, because now we know for sure 10 minutes is not long enough. Now Timothy Thatcher is 2-0 in the fight pit. the series between Ciampa and Thatcher, I believe, is now tied at 1-1. This was the right choice. Timothy Thatcher really needed to pick up this win. He hasn't had a legit win for quite a while. They stare each other down. It seems like Thatcher's kind of like nodding at Ciampa, like a show of respect, which sometimes people do after a match. So I'm not sure if they're going to go for a third match between the two. I'm not sure where you go from Fight Pit. It seems like Thatcher might have some begrudging respect for Ciampa, so we'll see where that goes. But that is it for this week. So next week, like I said, we'll have Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor versus Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch so that Finn can earn the right to defend his own title against somebody. We'll presumably see more between Io Shirai and Mercedes Martinez. That should be good. Let's see, we'll have more of the men's and women's Dusty Tag Team Tournament matches. So that should be fun. And I'm sure we'll see something with Karrion Kross, which won't be. But I am excited to see what's going on next week. Again, on Twitter, I am at ZachNXT. Again, at ZachNXT. Over there, let me know what you thought of the show. What'd you think of the Fight Pit? What do you think so far about the Dusty Tag Team Tournament? How do you think it's going? Are you excited about the women's tournament? Who do you think is going to get the next shot at the NXT title? You think it's going to be Karrion Kross? You think we're going ahead with Pete Dunne? Let me know your thoughts about the show over there, or really about anything. I'm always down to have some fun over there. But in the meantime, I will see you here next week. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been so fantastic. And thank you for listening.